seeing things growing, whether it is plants, whether it's our relationships, whether it's other humans, whether it's an idea, abstract, beyond storytelling, that is something that drives us as humans and is so rewarding. Anyone who walks into this farm that we have immediately gets a smile that wipes across their face because it's just something that we crave as humans. So taking that first initial step, planting a seed, helping it sprout, and harvesting it when it's ready is one of the most rewarding things you can do. It's incredibly simple. It really brings you back down to the earth that we're on, and it can set you up for new exciting adventures.
Welcome to Tangled Taproot, where we explore the unique stories of small-scale farmers in the Midwest. I'm John.
I'm Jackson.
I'm Kristen.
And this is a production of Milk and Hummus.
What is milk and hummus?
Well, I'm going to tell you. We make flavorful hummus and ready-to-drink plant-based lattes that focus on locally sourced ingredients, sustainable packaging, and the humble chickpea. In this episode, we got to sit down with Josh Smith, a owner and St. Louis native of Neon Greens. It's a really cool concept. I believe it's radically fresh produce company crafting the best salad you've ever had. It's pretty on par there because I had one of their Unami Crunch salads and it was fantastic.
I bet. Yeah, he said something like 98% of the lettuce that we eat in America is grown in California. We're in the Midwest, which means that it takes about a week or two before we actually get to taste that ourselves.
But that's faster than the fashion trends that come from the coast. You know, that takes 2 years. Salad greens only take 2 weeks.
Salad does have that over the fashion trends for sure.
Well, this place is really unique. We got to get a tour of the vertical farm operation. That's like butts up right against their restaurant
which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Like talk about farm to table.
Yeah. It's pretty automated and yeah, it's really cool. And we'll definitely have some audio clips of the actual tour on here, but
yeah. So I wasn't there, but tell me more about this conveyor belt, John. I was so intrigued.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like it before. Basically, you know, you have someone that's harvesting in real time. That's sort of prepping freshly picked. I don't know whether it be the red sweet crisp or a green oak leaf or Mizuna. I think some of the three varieties there, and it goes on this conveyor belt, and boom, just right into the hands of the preppers.
Wow. So they grow the lettuce above the restaurant, and then there's a conveyor belt that just brings it down.
It's raised, but then you have this like little window that you can open up, and the conveyor is on top of the restaurant, but there's like some elevation change, which makes it perfect for this really unique idea. It's fun. It's like a little factory, Wonka factory of... Yeah.
I would say it's kind of like a show. It sounds quite theatrical and it's bustling with creativity and colors and layers, and it brings you into an experience, which really kind of makes sense. He has a background on Broadway and set designing. Nice. He is a man full of ideas and just waiting for his creativity to come out. And in this case, he has merged that with his food love and interest for fresh greens.
You know, for sure. He's a hell of a businessman, I think. I think that degree in theater really did his thing. What he said is variables were money, time, and people. And like you could use that for like any business concept. And so he's really just, and he really made the most of that for not only when he was, you know, a set designer and a creative in theater, but also for this, for what he's doing now with these salads.
It's a transformative background or a change from one industry that involves that creative storytelling to... basically urban hydroponic
farming.
Yeah, and he's still doing storytelling, right?
Food storytelling.
Food storytelling.
Yeah, ingredient or leaf to bowl.
Also, the conveyor belt reminds me of, have you guys ever been to Krispy Kreme? You can see the donuts being made like through the conveyor belt, like as it happens.
Maybe we have, but we would deny ever being near a Krispy Kreme.
No.
Oh, come on. We've all been to a Krispy Kreme at least one time.
We are a nation of donut eaters. But you can always cancel out donuts with some mighty fine salads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like they have 9 different varieties. So I guess...
Yeah, that's what he was saying.
About 9. And each one is remarkably different. And I guess has a story behind it.
Yeah, from what I remember from the interview, there were 9 flagship salads, 3 revolving salads, like seasonal salads. One of the seasonals were always almost a collaboration with like some local farmer or local business.
Yeah, and that always provides an interesting layer of, you know, unique complexity and also relationship to the city you're in.
And it's a great way to showcase creativity because it's involving the community, showcasing or uplifting another business, whether it's a grower, a farmer, whatnot. And yeah, it just allows another display or theater show set of a new salad, new colors, new texture, new flavors.
And I did like how he is an Alton Brown fan. That was definitely a positive influence growing up on TV for me.
Well, yeah, and he said that I feel like another one of his influences, he said his grandparents were vegetarian at a very young age. And as the resident vegetarian, I think it's cool. And I think it obviously like played an impact also being in New York and being exposed to all these different cultures. New York is just this huge melting pot of different cultures and foods. And he got to experience all of that. And I think that shows in his salads. That's why like the ones that he has, they're just so drastically different and so like bursting with flavor.
Well, and just, I mean, the variety and immense diversity from all of his research and development. I was very impressed to hear about his professional growing phase where he was just developing skills, reading a lot of books, setting up small systems, slightly larger systems in his own home, and attempting to germinate and grow numerous types of vegetables, not just lettuces. But then to hear that he tried at least 60 different varieties of greens was, you know, yeah, that's an incredible breadth of
60 just to settle on 3.
Yeah.
Like, that's so incredible.
It's exciting to think about.
Yeah, exactly. All the research, everything that goes behind that. Like, you're getting, like, the freshest and the best. It's amazing. I was very impressed.
Again, we like to talk about background and where people come from. And it's not, an agricultural background. You know, he basically slammed on the accelerator with his own R&D work and understanding both the design for the hydroponic system, as well as, like you just said, like all the different varietals that need to be tested to see if they are viable to grow and how productive they are. And that's really cool.
So we have 2 farms. This is one of them.
Wow. Want to close the door?
Sure. Yeah,
okay. It's climate control.
It is, yeah. So this is... This is a younger of the 2 farms. So we, in our promise and effort to keep everything as fresh as humanly possible, we plant every single day, we transplant every single day, and we harvest every single day. So we have an ongoing cyclical harvest that we've designed. You can see here, these trays here, this is our nursery. This is where they begin their lives. Over the top left is some seedlings that were just planted today. And over here on the bottom right are seedlings that will be transplanted tomorrow.
Little baby lettuce.
Exactly.
They're all about like maybe 2 inches, 3 inches, 2 inches.
Yeah,
3 inches.
That's about what they get to. And it sort of varies based on the varietal.
Okay.
This up here is Sweet Crisp, that's Batavia here, and then that's Mizuno way in the back. Mizuno kind of grows like a weed.
Yeah.
And you can see their little root systems that are starting underneath. So this whole nursery is actually a hydroponic system in and of itself. There are 2 different kinds of hydroponic systems that this machine employs. This is an ebb and flow system, so the water ebbs and flows out of these troughs that you see here, whereas this area, the cultivation area, employs a system called an NFT system, or it's a modified NFT system. NFT stands for nutrient film technique. It just means that the nutrients drip down and in a tiny little film and graze the roots that you can see there.
So essentially there's little sticks or tufts of lettuce coming out of the, you said it's like a film?
Foam wall.
Foam wall.
So it's a foam wall. It's reticulated foam, similar to the foam that you'd use as a filter in an aquarium pump.
And it it's very, obviously then, it's very porous, so you have your liquid from the uppermost point, and it just trickles down through the,
exactly,
the roots.
Yeah, exactly. We have in the middle, there's actually a wicking strip, so it's food safe cotton, and that acts as the conduit to deliver all the water and nutrients to the seedlings that you see, which are actually embedded in this little triangular foam object. It is
a
plug.
It's like a substrate,
yes,
of sorts.
Exactly. It's actually made of coco coir. So it is inert. It is not susceptible to pathogens or bacteria. It's perfectly food safe, and it works as a really great substrate for the plants.
Yeah. And then, like, looking at this right now, it's just row upon row, and you can move it almost like a library.
Exactly.
Or, you know, an archival room, which is pretty neat.
Yeah.
And the lights are not a yellow or white light. They're very distinct.
Yes. Yeah, they're, it's red and blue. And so red and blue, that is the information from the light spectrum that plants actually use. It's a communication device, actually. So plants, when they are flowering or in a bloom state, use red part of the spectrum to let them know that it's time for them to start flowering, versus blue is a cue to actually remain in or cue the vegetative state. So you'll see in a lot of flowering plants and tomatoes and cannabis and strawberries, when grown hydroponically, they actually use different parts of the spectrum at different times to let it know now it's time to flower. And you pair that with a different NPK formula of nutrients to give it the information that it needs.
Hey,
yeah.
So there's like a brain in the background that has the spectrum of light dictating to all these panels on the wall.
A little bit. Okay. A little bit. It's a dumb brain, but it's a brain.
Yeah, sure. And I'm sure it's timed, at least.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, so there's actually, I'll pull up the app on my phone. So there's an app that controls this whole thing, and it shows me the farms. We have our two farms. I can click on the dashboard. It shows me the humidity, the CO2.
Nice.
Shows me all of the water health information, the pH, electroconductivity. Shows me recent photos in case there was a power outage. I can see if the crops have failed. I have control over all of these elements within via HVAC. CO2, we actually dose CO2 inside the farms. You name it, there's a lot.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then this is a mature crop, and this is what we'll be harvesting tomorrow.
And this is much larger, wider diameter.
Yeah.
It essentially looks like a wall of seaweed, or I don't know what you want to describe it. What type of lettuce is this?
So this is the Batavia. This is a green lettuce. It doesn't appear green because we're actually hitting the plants with red and blue light. The red and blue is actually canceling out. This is a color theory thing. Red and blue cancels out the red and blue that exist in the pigment within the plants. And that's why they actually appear black.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like a water plant.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Very rippled. I don't know. Which type is this?
This is the Mizuno. So this is a Japanese mustard green. Mizu in Japanese meaning water.
Okay.
It is a water-loving plant. That's why, when it comes to the design of our SOP, we keep the sweet crisp at the top. It likes to be the driest. The Batavia is in the middle. It prefers a medium humidity. And then at the bottom we have Mizuno, which is water-loving. So it actually gets the most of the humidity that's present in the chamber.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the Mizuno is much more, advanced off the wall and very wavy. Also looks very, very similar color, like a dark red almost.
Yeah. No, and it is huge. The
black, like you mentioned, yeah.
The leaves are somewhat serrated. It sort of cascades off the wall. It looks like it's a waterfall.
It does. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
Josh, thanks for allowing the opportunity to come into Neon Greens and just give an amazing tour of, you call it a farm, and then right now we are in the
harvest capsule.
Harvest capsule. Yes. Just dive in. Like, we are in Neon Greens. What is Neon Greens?
Neon Greens is a vertically integrated salad concept. We are quick serve in farm to table form, and we are all about growing the best lettuce we possibly can to serve in salads and really involve the audience or customer base to take part in the fun of it all.
Yeah. And what got your interest in this concept? I mean, is it the growth part of it, the customer service restaurant part of it, or somewhere in between? I guess, or all the above.
As far as my story and how it integrates into that, I actually lived in New York the past 11 years.
Wow.
So I grew up here originally and went to school in Pittsburgh and then went straight to New York after that and worked in film and television and theater for that whole time that I was there.
Film, television, and theater. So all the arts.
Yes.
What's it? Performance arts.
Yeah, exactly. And as a designer, so it was all sort of visual storytelling and visual communication. I think that's sort of the basis of where my interest lies in this. And beyond that, just I've been obsessed with food my whole life, just as a medium for communication, for showing people that you care about them, can be revolutionary too. Food can just, you know, it's a conduit through society that's just so incredibly important in so many different ways.
Yeah. I mean, there's politics in food, there's storytelling, absolutely. Yes. It can be very divisive and also bring people together from different cultures in, I guess, different parts of the city, St. Louis.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of my food discovery actually began in St. Louis and then sort of transferred to New York, where I was just exposed to a ton of different cultures and ideas. And I just have always been a food nerd myself. I've read the Harold McGee book backwards and forwards.
Nice.
And always been a big fermentation nerd. So
what was your ferment of choice then?
Or kimchi.
Kimchi. Okay.
That's my favorite thing to ferment, but I've dabbled.
Okay. So more on the, vegetable fermentation versus like a beer brewing?
Yeah, I haven't really dabbled in that.
Okay. So St. Louis, originating here, getting your bearings on food, what was your initial gravitated you? Let's start off with the St. Louis area. And then I guess as you transitioned into New York, what did you learn and advance with your, as you said, your food interest?
Sure. Well, growing up in St. Louis, my parents actually became vegetarians when I was about 9 years old. And that was the mid-90s, which was not the easiest time when it comes to accessibility of vegetarian food.
Right.
So I had two working parents, and both of whom didn't have a ton of time to make dinner. It was kind of tough sometimes. Incredibly difficult, but when it came to the offerings available, I just started getting into cooking myself. I was interested in it. It was, something I liked to putz around with, and I was glued to the Food Network growing up.
The Food Network was awesome. What was your favorite show?
Oh, I liked Alden Brown.
Alden, all the science behind it. Mm-hmm. I did like the breakdowns for sure.
It's great. I mean, I think if I could pinpoint why I love food so much or how my interest sparked in food so early is Alden Brown's show. So Good Eats, for those who don't know, Good Eats was a television show on Food Network, and Alton Brown was the host, and every episode they'd dive into a different cuisine or even just a specific kind of food, whether it's, chili or ramen or what have you. And he would do this incredible sort of breakdown of, they'd start with social anthropological into it, and they talk about the development of that food item over time. They talk about the science of it, the chemistry. They talk about, how people relate to that food, and it just fleshed out food in a way that really gave it such power. So being exposed to that show just sparked my interest from this.
I guess in your home, were you predominantly, I would guess, like, was it 100% or majority was plant-based or a vegetarian?
When we ate with my parents, yeah. I mean, they didn't have a steadfast rule of, you know, no protein, animal proteins can be consumed on the premises, but no, it was mostly plant-based. And then from that also, they exposed us at a young age to lots of different interesting types of food. We went to Myleaton and House of India and, you know, you name it.
So fortunately, St. Louis does have a lot of world cuisine, a lot of different unique neighborhoods with all sorts of good items. And that was the case when you were growing up.
It was, yeah.
And neither your parents were in the agricultural industry, or were they?
No.
Okay.
Very much not.
Yeah. Then school brought you to New York, or was it a more post-school career path?
It was the career path. Yeah, exactly. About half of my colleagues or peers from school went to LA, and then the other half went to New York, and I went to New York.
And were you in the city proper?
No, I lived in, well, kind of, sort of. I lived in Brooklyn. So okay. I lived in Williamsburg for 2 years, and then for the last 9 years, I lived in Bushwick.
Okay. And was it a culture shock to you?
No, not at all. Yeah. No, I went to school in Pittsburgh, which, you know, it's about the same size, actually, as St. Louis. Area I was in was populated a little bit more than our downtown is currently. But no, Pittsburgh was a fantastic city, a fantastic food city. And then going to New York from there, no, I loved it. I mean, I love cities, being surrounded by people and culture. And
I mean, there's definitely a lot of folks to get great ideas, people watch. And you're doing a lot with, like you said, performing arts at the time in New York. I mean, you're basically trying to, or like, what was the medium, I guess, what were you doing?
So I started in theater. I started working for some Broadway designers. Okay. I was a set designer. So I designed sets and sometimes lighting as well. And I worked for some Broadway designers to begin with, about 3-4 years, and then transitioned to film and television. And that was working on, you know, just designing sets for film and TV. Worked on some HBO shows, Amazon.
So this Netflix. This is the background. This is the environment of which the actors are basically doing their thing and fully supporting that, and not costume design, correct?
No. Yeah, just the environment around them.
Gotcha. Exactly. So then, question being, this is definitely a very artistic field, artistic concentration, a lot of factors. How did you develop into a restaurateur or a restaurant, you know, vertically integrated concept in St. Louis?
Yeah, it's so funny. I don't think I ever had a moment where I decided I'm going to do this thing, and I did it. It was just this very seemingly slow, but actually, when I look at the timeline, relatively quick process where I had an idea, and then I started doing research, and then I started putting financials together and looking at, is this actually a viable business? And then that passed muster, and then I started to think about how it could actually manifest physically, and did more analyses and research and started designing it. And, you know, I never really looked back. But the funny thing is, it's very similar to my old career.
Because essentially this space was designed, curated by you.
Yeah, I had some great architects that helped flesh out the whole concept. I did most of the design, branding, all of that.
And that requires a great deal of creativity.
It does. And really, I mean, so does food. So when you think about what I used to do, was I essentially produced an environment that is influenced by a story. And I used the variables at my disposal to produce that. So it was time, money, and people. And we're kind of doing the same exact thing here with food. So it's the same variables here. It's time, money, and people. And the deliverable is slightly different. It's food. And the thing about the food is that you actually have way more variables that you get to use in a creative way to influence folks. And you have taste and texture and sight and feel. Whereas in film and television, you have what's at the screen. It's visual and aural. Here, you have just way more.
Yes, some of those sensory, I guess, inputs are not present in film versus, you know, being able to actually try the product. What particularly, I guess, the growing part of the operation, like, how did that process evolve? I mean, were you, I guess, hesitant or scared to take on a agricultural challenge, you know, why not source it from someone else and then do the salad part? Or what made you want to do all of it?
Yeah, well, it's a few reasons. First, it's quality. A lot of people don't know it. More do now because I've been, you know, a lot of people are more vocal about it, including myself, but 98% of the lettuce that we eat in this country is grown in California and Arizona. So it's grown there, it's packaged, it makes its way to us, and that process takes anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks. So by the time you bite into lettuce, most lettuce that you would get in any other restaurant, it's about 20 days old. It turns to soup almost immediately after it gets into your refrigerator from the grocery store. So we need to find a better way to grow things in this country.
Sure.
And there are a lot of tools at our disposal, not only hydroponics, but other methods of farming, other more developed regenerative ways that we can farm the land that we have. But it all started with quality. And living in the Northeast, we have all these salad chains. We have Sweetgreen, we have Chopped, we have Just Salad, and everyone goes there. I mean, they're incredibly popular, but the lettuce doesn't taste very good. So I thought there had to be a way to do this better. Really, short of growing hydroponically, locally, there is not a way to get fresh lettuce within 24 hours unless you spend a crazy amount of money and you fly in lettuce like you would oysters, you know, every single day, which is just not the way the system is built. So agriculturally, it was really important to do that. Also, for me, this project is so much about food education, understanding our food systems, and having people just form a more intimate relationship with the food that they consume and the people that grow it. So agriculture was a very, very important element to the project in that regard, too.
I love that. It's an educational piece. Again, like the whole story that you're saying, presenting, educating customer base on, you know, being the supply chain of our, you know, at least one element or a spoke in the supply chain, that being, you know, lettuce. And I mean, it translates across to all other produce as well. I guess the lettuce is like the symbolic or actual, but it's the tool they're using to showcase the inefficiencies that, you know, can be there.
Yeah. And it tastes much better too.
Yeah. And for those that do not know, they need to experiment with lettuce that's grown and harvested, I guess, consume it within, as soon as possible? Or, I mean...
I would say, yeah. I mean, lettuce is a super perishable crop. It's, if you can get it locally, that's awesome. There are a bunch of growers who grow in the summers here in St. Louis or around St. Louis that have some urban farms in the area. There's a bunch of folks at Earth Dance who grow really incredible produce. It's great when it's fresh.
And you can do a little at-home case study where you buy your grocery store head lettuce, I guess, of similar variety, or ideally the same variety, just so that you can make it fair.
Yeah.
And then, give it a go, blind tasting.
You bet.
There is a definite science behind this, and that is drawn away, I would think, from creativity, potentially, since it's more of like there are things that and variables that have to come into play. And that requires a certain level of education on your part and understanding about the systems. How did you hone that skill set?
I read a lot. It was a COVID thing. It was I started growing hydroponically during COVID when there was no film and television work. I started out with a little tiny tabletop system and then soon graduated to just going down the rabbit hole on YouTube and bought a bunch of industrial hydroponic farming equipment from Iowa. I had it shipped to the house that I was staying in and built a little test site. This is in 2020. And I had about 100 sites that I could plant. And I grew everything from any kind of lettuce you could imagine. I did tomatillos, I did tomatoes, I did peppers, cucumbers, you name it. And I kept copious notes. It was kind of a research project. And I'd go down every day and I'd check weights and I'd, you know, look at maturity times and all that stuff. And that's where it all started.
I mean, do you think if you were to start your life over, you could fall into the agricultural earlier on, or like not industry, but like, I guess more on the science and ag side of things versus like, you know, the creative arts side of things? Or
I am so happy with the path I've taken.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of tell everyone, going to theater school, because that's what I went to school, you know, I was set design for theater, kind of turns you into like a communications ninja. because you have to be so good at communicating a story in a very efficient and effective and creative way. We were just talking about earlier, storytelling is just like primally so important to us as just humans. And being able to hone that craft in a way that gives you an incredible amount of skills, from knowing how to operate bandsaw to, you know, how to paint watercolors, how to do a budget, how to, you know, all of these things that are utilitarian, but at the same time, the common goal is, are we telling the story? Are we telling it well? Are we telling it effectively? And are we getting it across to folks in the way that we need to?
And I'm sure you selected, I guess, learning materials that probably resonated better with you, that actually presented information in a clear way that you were able to obviously absorb this wealth of information from the internet and translate it into an experiment, test this out, record your notes, as you mentioned, and then come up with this idea for a salad concept.
Yeah, it's a lot of observation. I mean, that's science, right? It's really just honing your observational skills. And if you're given the tools, which I have, my parents as a birthday present, I think that year actually got me like a hydroponics 101 textbook.
Sure.
And I read that backwards and forwards, and all the principles, I mean, botanically are the same. It's talking about, you know, certain levels of nutrients and understanding light cycles and, you know, everything that a plant needs, and then just using the power of observation beyond that.
Then I have to ask, did you come up with the conveyor belt idea?
I did. Yeah. It was, to be honest, it was a creative solution to an annoying problem, which is we're growing our lettuce up here in the harvest capsule. It's actually 6 feet above grade. So the restaurant's at zero grade. The harvest capsule is 6 feet above the restaurant. So we had to get the lettuce into the restaurant somehow. And we weren't going to run all the way around the farms and bring it in the back door of the kitchen, because that's about 230 feet. And the totes that they're in will be outside. What if it's raining? It's just, there's a lot of variables there. It was a little serendipitous, actually, the conveyor belt, because it's an efficient way to get it in the kitchen. And then it also is very literally showing you the journey of the food from seed to plate.
It's very, very unique, very cool. I look forward to seeing a lettuce transcend that. I mean, that's not something that would be in like a lean architecture book, I wouldn't think. You know, like solve this inefficiency with a conveyor belt. But
no, probably not. But I mean, that's again, the whole like theater training thing. It just, you learn how to use existing tools in a way that just is not traditional.
All right. Now, I guess let's just real quickly explore the salad concept. I mean, so you have employees orchestrating these ingredients that are just freshly picked into how many different offerings?
So we have 9 signature salads on the menu.
Okay.
We have 3 seasonal salads, one of which is always a local collaboration.
Nice.
Our first local collaboration was with Grace Meat and Three.
Ooh.
They did a smoked chicken for our Thai barbecue chicken salad.
Man. Yeah.
It's really good.
That sounds awesome.
One of our best sellers. And then we have 2 soups on the menu. We have a seasonal soup and then our signature green soup. And then a bread that we make in-house. It's a version of a pão de queijo, which is a Brazilian cheese bread. And then we have a vegan soft serve on top of that.
And what is that?
It is a swirl of matcha and Thai basil flavored soft serve.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really good. It's an oat base, and we do it simple, so it's, you know, you can just get a swirl, or you can get it with quote-unquote the works. And with the works, it has a miso caramel that we make in-house, it has crunchy ganmai brown rice, smoky almonds, and then a sesame nougatine that we also make in-house.
Amazing. Just for clarity, you opened a month and a half ago?
Yeah.
And we're, what is this, May? Middle of May right now? So what has been your primary customer, I guess, or do you love kids? Do you love...
I mean, that's what's great about it, is there's no typical customer.
Cool.
It runs the gambit. I mean, we're in such a great spot for a lot of working professionals. So there's Cortex, there's BJC, there's also students from SLU and WashU, a lot of local people that work from home now. The work from home revolution has really also changed the way that people eat food during the day. So we have a lot of people that will come and grab takeout and go home, eat it, and go back to work.
And so people are enjoying the food, and they don't have to feel incredibly, I don't know, sometimes, you know, bad, because it's really healthy.
Yeah, it is healthy. And I mean, health aside, like part of health and food is your relationship with it.
Right, yeah.
And being able to foster something that's meaningful with the customer, or I realized earlier I said audience also, but with your customer or audience is so important.
So what would you see, I guess, in the future? Is this something that you're going to expand upon, or are you going to maintain your core grow lettuce operation, or are you going to expand into something a little bit, a seeded vegetable, like a pepper, or like you said, you grew tomatillos. Is just that does not scale, or what?
So we're growing lettuce because we need to. We need to grow lettuce for this product to be the best it could possibly be. We don't need to grow sweet potatoes, and we don't necessarily need to grow tomatoes either. We could, but when it comes to control, consistency, and quality, lettuce is the name of the game, and it's what we do best. And when it comes to scaling, I don't know if we would up production at this location, but looking at ways to expand and serve the wider St. Louis community is definitely at the forefront of our minds.
Because I know I've walked into Local Harvest and I've seen your lettuce before. I thought it was before this was even open.
Exactly. Yeah. So we spent about 5 months doing lettuce R&D.
So okay.
60 different kinds of lettuce. We did trials. And a big part of the business model is the consistency and reliability of the lettuce itself, but also the SOPs, the way that we harvest, transplant, and seed every day. So we landed on three different varietals that matured at the same rate, that had the highest yield possible, and had the best flavor contrast between all of them, and were easier to deal with. A big issue that you have in agriculture is a germination rate. So that's what is the failure rate of seeds. We went with some varietals that are actually very specifically hybridized for hydroponics. So the failure rate is significantly diminished.
And I'm sure the seed stock is very important. I mean, so are you guaranteed a certain germination rate, or?
Yes, okay. We are. Yeah. And so they actually put it on the packets of all this. So
good. Excellent.
We have a rep at Johnny's, and if there's ever a problem, we know who to call.
Good.
But with that R&D that we did, we were able to sell to have small local establishments offer our lettuce, our trial lettuce, to folks, customers, to get the word out. It was some marketing, but it was also building really, really great relationships with local St. Louis food entities.
And do you see yourself going into the, I guess, the grocery category as the lettuce itself? Or is this something that you're going to take your lettuce that you grow and ensure that all the, customer are met internally? I guess if you have extra, would you sell it off, or like how does that work into your model right now?
We'll never have extra lettuce.
Okay. That's a good problem to have.
Good problem to have. Yeah, as they say. So we're in fact looking at sourcing additional lettuce from local hydroponic farmers. It's important to keep it local. It's important to keep it hydroponic for the 365 aspect of it all. As far as the business model goes, so Neon Greens, our mission statement is we're a radically fresh produce concept, crafting the freshest salad you've ever had, or the best salad you've ever had. And very specifically, we don't say we're a restaurant, we're a produce concept, because first and foremost, it's about the lettuce that we're growing. So when it comes to the identity of the company, of the brand, of everything, our lettuce is super important. And the way that it is served and the consistency of that is super important. So having ultimate control over that channel of sales, of the end product, being a salad specifically, eliminates any sort of error that you would have there.
Okay. Yeah, that's neat. You're your own category on its own, instead of, pulling apart from a restaurant nomenclature, I guess, into a concept because of the vertical integration, because of the extreme closeness. And that's what that really is. It's an extreme closeness to your lettuce.
Right.
That's the stars, I guess. Do you ever consider, I don't know if you're going into the genetics to make your own cross breeds in the future, or if, maybe something that works well?
I would love to have the resources to do that. This is the way that I would say that.
Sure.
Yeah. No, we talk often within the agriculture team here of ways to improve what we do. And that's definitely one of them, is getting plant scientists involved.
BisAnalyst has a great resource.
Oh, yeah.
For those.
Danforth and 39N. And
yeah.
There's a bunch.
Very cool. Where do you see yourself or this concept in a few years?
I'd love to have a greater reach over the region. So being able to serve more folks and have more folks experience this is the ultimate goal.
Yeah, it really is an experience. Yeah, this whole place is really cool. It's a great location. Well done.
Thank you.
Is there anything that you want me to ask you that I haven't yet?
No, this has been great. No, really appreciate your time.
Was there any moments throughout the process? I mean, nothing ever goes to plan, usually. I mean, so what were some moments, or maybe if just one, that was distressing, at least?
Let's see. I mean, most of them are farm related.
Okay. Yeah.
These farms are just complicated machines.
Sure.
That have a lot of components and a lot of points of failure. And we actually had a moment this winter when it was about negative 10 degrees outside when our HVAC broke on one of the farms.
Okay.
Now, that might sound like, okay, big whoop, like the HVAC broke and it's negative 10, probably okay. These farms are so well insulated that when the lights turn on, the LED lights turn on, LEDs don't emit a lot of heat, but they emit a lot of energy. And because of that energy and because of the thermal insulation of these very highly rated reefer rated farms, it can get up to 100 degrees inside the farms, close to 100 degrees, and it can get up to 100% humidity.
Wow.
Without that HVAC system taking out humidity. So it broke. It got real swampy and soupy in the farms. And it took about 2 days for the tech to be able to fix it because of the conditions outside.
Oh, okay.
So we actually alternated cracking the door open of the farm and regulating the humidity and temperature that way. Every few hours, or at least overnight, one of us would, you know, sleep
sure.
6 to 8 hours and then come back and do it. And it actually, the humidity was so high that because in this room that we're in right now, the harvest capsule, this is what the door was cracked into, huge glass wall facing Manchester. With the cracked door overnight, the amount of humidity that came out formed a wall or sheet of ice on these windows an inch thick.
An inch thick.
An inch thick.
All right. Yes. That is distressing.
It was disgusting. Yes.
Then what else, like, would you recommend to someone that is interested in, I don't know, whether it be growing hydroponically or developing a concept, just in general about food and food appreciation? Is there anything that, any advice or wisdom?
I'd say plant a seed. That's the first thing you can do. What's the saying? The best time to plant a tree is you know, a year ago or something.
Yeah, yeah, like that, right.
Yesterday.
The past, yes.
To that point, seeing things growing, whether it is plants, whether it's our relationships, whether it's other humans, whether it's an idea, abstract, beyond storytelling, that is something that drives us as humans and is so rewarding. Anyone who walks into this farm that we have immediately gets a smile that wipes across their face because it's just something that we crave as humans. So taking that first initial step, planting a seed, helping it sprout and harvesting it when it's ready is one of the most rewarding things you can do. It's incredibly simple. It really brings you back down to the earth that we're on, and it can set you up for new exciting adventures.
Well, Josh, thank you. That's much appreciated, and look forward to seeing the future of Neon Greens and your work here in the Grove.
Awesome.
And beyond.
Thank you.
Is there anywhere else that people can find out more information? The website, social media?
Yeah, so our Instagram is very well populated, Neon Greens STL. And then we have a website you can order from, has updates, information, and there'll be more soon.
Cool. Well, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks again to Josh Smith of Neon Greens. You can visit them in the Grove on Manchester here in St. Louis. You could also visit their website at neongreens.com, or you could follow them on Instagram at neongreensstl. This is Tangled Taproot, a production of Lookin' Hummus. I'm Jackson.
I'm John.
And I'm Kristen.
If you like what you heard, please like, share, and review us. Again, thank you so much for listening. Send us your thoughts to tangledtaproot@milkandhummus.com. We plan on answering questions and sharing feedback. Until next time.